So let me start with short comments to the models demo. So yesterday we had this fact where we only proved the third assertion, and the first and the second one are exercises, and these are the first and the second exercise here. So you see that we have a super martingale, and you should show that it's stable with respect to stopping. That's the first question. And the second question is that you have these inequalities if you consider your super martingale at a stopping time. Okay, the third question is something to calculate. So I try to find some reasonable numbers, but still the outcome is not so nice. So you really have to probably use the calculator a bit. And yeah, so I think the question is clear. So you should find the equivalent martingale measure. So we have the Cox-Ross-Rubinstein model, so it's clear how to get this. And then you should compute the fair price. So we have the formulas and so on, so it should be clear what to do. And actually, here is the formula even given, because first we compute the price of a European put option, and then we compute for also for just the three time steps the price of the American put option. So we have to do this backwards induction, and in order to compute the things, I've given a hint how to understand this U2 tilde, this payoff of the final time. Our final time is just 2, and you can understand this in a way that you think of what the share price values have been. So if you look here, S2 divided by S1. So this is S is actually the share price. So I did not write S superscript 1 here. So I hope it's clear. And yeah, and then you split what happens if S1 was 5 and if S1 was 1/5, and then you can compute these things. So everything is kind of explained. And the point is we want to compare. So this is the same situation with the same interest rate and change of the share price. And the question is, what is the price for European put option and what is the price for American put option? So if you don't make any mistakes, you should get different prices. And the point is now in the five-star question, if we consider a call option, then the American and the European call option price is equal. So this is a phenomena which can be shown theoretically in a general case. And then we had in the American option, we had this characterization of an optimal stopping time. And now we always assume that the F0, the first sigma algebra of the filtration, is trivial, and this is not necessary to assume. So one can also work without, and the question is what happens then? And you can prove these two relations, and it is not difficult. It's just, it actually doesn't deserve the star, but I needed to find two questions with a star. So this can be done also by everybody if you can just go to through the lecture. It's not difficult. Okay, I spend enough time with talking about the exercises. So let's come to the last chapter of the course, and now we continue with the Black-Scholes model. So the title is the Black-Scholes option pricing model. So this is actually the most famous part of the finance, or the most often used, the Black-Scholes model. So it is important that you at least have seen it once if you have a finance course, because that is the thing kind of everybody knows about finance. There is this Black-Scholes model. And what was the point? The history was that in 1973, this model was developed by three people, by Black, Morton, and Scholes. I don't know why it's called Black-Scholes. What happens with Morton? I didn't check the theory so deeply, the history so deeply, sorry. And it turns out that in 1997, Morton and Scholes got the Nobel Prize. In economics. I don't know if you know that, maybe, I probably you know, that in mathematics there's no Nobel Prize, so this has some strange history that mathematicians can never get a Nobel Prize. Yeah, there's a question, why did Black not get the Nobel Prize? Was he not recognized? The point is that at the time, so you can see from this is more than 20 years later. So at the time, 1997, Black was not alive anymore, and the Nobel Prize is only given to living people. So if he would have been alive, he would have gotten it as well. Okay, so that is the history. So this Black-Scholes pricing model was developed at that time, and it made a big impact in economics. And what is it about? So from the mathematical point of view, so we consider a stochastic basis . So what we first need in order to do the Black-Scholes model is the Brownian motion. So today we won't see any Black-Scholes model. We just work with the Brownian motion and think about how could we integrate such that the integrator is the Brownian motion. So that's our aim. Okay, so we need, or we use here in this model, t greater than zero. This is not a natural number anymore, but just a real number. And this is our finite time horizon. Then we need our interest rate, old fashioned greater or equal to zero, not negative. Maybe at some time somebody needs to correct this lecture notes and put the R also negative, but it seems that the interest is increasing anyway again. I mean, in the real world. So we have now omega FP, and we have a filtration which is with t. Now I'm writing t in the interval 0, capital T, and I mean it, so for every t. And this meaning is basically again the same. So it's an increasing family of sigma algebras. So, and we call this a stochastic basis. Satisfying the usual conditions. So this is a name And this is a short notation for the following situation. That this probability space is complete, so I'm not going into detail. If you know what it is, it's okay. If not, you won't feel it. So it's just a lot of theoretical conditions which we don't really see because we don't do a lot of proofs in detail. So this is complete. That means that, yeah, no, I'm not saying anything. Yeah, the second condition is sometimes we denote the filtration with such an F, like a P. And mean the whole family is right, continuous. So first we should say for we have that Fs is contained in Ft. So this is meant here like that. Whenever S is greater or equal to 0 is less or equal to T, is less than capital T. So this is a relation which we need. And these are sigma algebras on omega. And this is right continuous. Which means, so we have this concept, complete, right, continuous. And this means that if you learn about sigma algebras, then you learn that intersections of sigma algebras are sigma algebras. So if I'm writing the intersection of all Fs, where S is greater than T, and less than or equal to capital T, so the intersection goes over S, then first of all, it's clear from the properties of sigma algebras that this is a sigma algebra, but it is not clear whether it is Ft. So in general, it might be bigger, but the assumption right continuous means that if I take the intersection of all Fs as strictly bigger than T, then I'm getting Ft. So that is right continuous. And that should hold for all T in between 0 and less than capital T. For capital T, we cannot write this up. And we don't need to. Okay. Then we have another condition. We assume that we have a Brownian motion. So this is kind of a condition on the probability space, because if you take a very trivial probability space, then there's no Brownian motion living on that probability space. So you have to have a big enough probability space so that you can find enough random variables which form the Brownian motion. Okay, so we assume, and what I'm defining here is and so-called Ft Brownian motion, because we think the filtration is giving. If you define the Brownian motion without given filtration, then it's slightly bit different, but so Brownian motion, yeah, notation is going to be B, and this is BT, T in 0 capital T. Okay, I'm running out of space. Let's put it here. And what are these BTs? VT maps for each T from omega into the real line. And it is, yeah, this comes later. Measurability, we put the, here. So we have the following conditions. B0 is, or B1, okay. Trying to keep the notation like in the script. At time 0, for each omega, it is 0. So you can think of, maybe I should say that, you can think of these objects in two ways. And we are going to do this also. So if you keep the omega fixed, then you have a function in T on the interval 0, capital T, right? So this is the usual way as you meet the Brownian motion, maybe in the internet. So my Brownian motion starts in 0, as it said, is said here. And then we will learn that it is continuous. And usually if you try to simulate, it looks like such a path. And that would be the mapping omega maps to B. And I'm making it, yeah, I'm making a T and write T in 0 T. So this is a function in little t with omega fixed. And then you could do the other way around, and you could take a T fixed, and then for each T, you should have a random variable, which is BT. Okay, BT maps from omega into R. And so let's fix our conditions. So I said it should be continuous. So if I map T to B, and I can write this BT with a dot, meaning the T is running, and the omega is fixed. Or we can put the T, since we write it like that, it's okay. Is continuous. And here we assume for all omega, sometimes it's people assume for almost all, it's not a big difference. One can change from one setting to the next. The third condition is that BT is FT measurable. Okay, so for those who are not so skilled with this measurability properties and stuff, what's behind is that if I consider all omega in omega, such that BT is, let's say, in the interval AB, then this subset of omega is required to be an element of FT. And that should be for all intervals which are subset of the real line, something like that. The next property we need is that the increment BT minus BS, if we have the situation that zero is less or equal to S, less than T, less or equal to capital T, that should be independent from FS. And with respect to conditional expectation, we had already talked about what does it mean that the random variable, so this difference is a random variable, is independent from a sigma algebra, but I'm going to repeat it here. So what does it mean? It means that if you consider BT minus BS, is, let's say, in the interval AB, like here. So we consider all omega with this property. I'm leaving off the omega here for short notation. And I take the intersection with a set C, and the set C should be an element of Fs. Then this is the same as the product of these two conditions. And this is for all intervals AB. So I think this we had already. And the last condition we put here, that would be B5 now, is that we pin down the distribution of this increment. Namely, this distribution should be standard normal. So I'm writing N0 with variance T minus S. So standard normal, not standard normal, but normal distribution. With expectation and variance. So since the expectation is zero, the variance is the same as the second moment. I guess this is clear to you. And this holds for the same situation as here above, so we assume that the S is the smaller parameter. Okay, so that was the Brownian motion. This is our most important object from now on. And I was already wondering what to do. Maybe I'm doing that now. So I thought at least we should also create the Brownian motion once, and I wanted to show you some simulation, but then I thought maybe it's better you do the simulation yourself. So you're probably much more skilled in programming than I am. And so now I'm searching for my file. Apparently it's gone. Okay, so that was this picture here is actually this consists of some paths of the Brownian motion, and so I was able to simulate them. And what I would like to see is that you start with a random walk, because I always said if you start with a random walk and you have more and more make the time difference smaller and you scale it in a certain way, then you end up in a Brownian motion, standard Brownian motion, and or any other. And I thought maybe you can do that, and I will write up a question for the next demo that you can make a little R program or whatever. So it doesn't need to be R, MATLAB, or whatever you like best, that you in your favorite programming language you can simulate a Brownian motion. So after the course, so everybody should be able to do that, I think. So it doesn't help you if you just see it. Okay, maybe you have done it anyway already in some other course, I don't know. Okay, so we have the Brownian motion, and we specify now still our probability space a bit. For technical reasons, it is good to have this one, this sigma algebra, quite small. So we have actually for this filtration, the usual condition is, of course, not usual in that sense, but a common condition. I have to be careful how I put my words. Is that also this Ft is always a sub sigma algebra of this F. And now we make a special assumption that we, okay, yeah, maybe it can be also read. We assume that our sigma algebra is actually the largest of the filtration, and the filtration is the smallest filtration such that all the random variables BS. There's here's a typo, as I see. S should be less than T, and I'm writing it like that. So this is a sigma algebra, and this is a set. So I'm taking the sigma smallest sigma algebra of this sigma algebra unified with that one. So maybe you have learned if that even so, an intersection of two sigma algebras is a sigma algebra. For the union in general, that's not true. So if you take a union of two sigma algebras, in order to get a sigma algebra, you have to take the smallest sigma algebra which contains this union. So this is what I'm doing now. And the modern way of writing is, maybe I need it at some point, that you put instead of a union sign, this sign, which means the smallest sigma algebra containing these two. And what is this n? That was all sets which are in the sigma algebra. Now you can write F or Ft. This is F capital T. This is up to you. Such that the probability is zero. So all null sets, so to say. So these are the null sets. So Ft should contain all null sets of the space. Okay, that's our additional assumption. At some point, it is quite hidden that we use all these assumptions because I'm not proving a lot. But at least you should have enough information under which conditions everything is true, which I'm going to claim. Okay, so let's have a look at this creature called Brownian motion. I think this is quite a fascinating process, even if it's old and seems to be well known, but still you can find out new things about this Brownian motion. But the properties I'm mentioning now are quite well known for a long time already. We have a definition, right? We have assumed a lot on the probability space, and then we said, okay, there should be a process, so a family of random variables with all these conditions. And as a serious mathematician, the first question is, okay, if you write down all these conditions, is there an object which can satisfy these conditions? And the answer is yes, and you can give the answer in different ways. So there are like four or five proofs, completely different proofs I know of, where you can prove that the Brownian motion exists. So it's quite believable after five different proofs. We are not going to prove this. And we assume the usual conditions and at the beginning, and one needs then to prove that actually the Brownian motion exists on such a space. So the space omega f p, and I said I can denote the filtration also with such an f, can be chosen. Such that it satisfies. The usual conditions. In a sense, complete probability space and right continuous filtration and so on. Okay. Then an interesting thing about the Brownian motion. So the Brownian motion has continuous paths, but it is quite impossible to draw them. So this path So I try to explain it with the words. It cannot be drawn. But only sketched. What do I mean by that? So if you have a Brownian motion, then it should look, well, should look like that. But if you now take such a part of the Brownian motion and yeah, maybe this is not good. Let's use another color. So I'm taking this part of the Brownian motion and I'm going to enlarge that. Then this should look like it's hard to draw, so it's a function. So it makes a lot of a little zigzag movement, and if you take again such a part and enlarge that, then you see the same. So it's called self-similarity, and also what is the consequence now. So we have something like that. So this part is maybe this. And what is the consequence? So the length of each path is infinite. Okay, so that's why it's hard to draw, because you never get ready. So we can also write this in a different way. How can we compute the length? For example, if we compute the limit of b at point k divided by n minus, yeah, and we do it for omega wise, and b k minus 1 divided by n. And then we take the absolute value, so we would, okay, you would take here a point and there a point, and then you compare these two values and you take the kind of the distance. And we do this first for n, and then we let n go to infinity. And it turns out that this is infinite, almost truly. And this has something to do with what you could understand as the length of the path. Okay, what else can we say? this is important for our attempt to make an integer and how to define it. It's not so easy to prove, but we can show that these paths, the reason is because they wriggle so much, you cannot differentiate them. So they are not smooth. So the paths. Are for almost all omega in omega not nowhere differentiable. Okay. Is there anything else I wanted to say? Yeah. What I'm not going to prove, but we probably use, is the following. So we have that Bt minus Bs is independent from Fs. And using this condition, and also the fact that if I have Bt, then this is Ft measurable, or Fs is Fs measurable. If I'm using these conditions, then I can show that the Brownian motion has independent increments. So any of you know what it means. So if I have an n in n, and then an increasing sequence of time points, like that. And then I take these increments, btn minus bt. So this doesn't need to be capital T, so you can choose it, whatever you want, of course. Btn minus bt1, tn minus 1. Btn minus 1 minus btn minus 2, and so on. Until bt1. You can, now it's your choice to write bt1 minus bt0. We know that bt0 is 0, so we get this vector of random variables, and all these random variables are independent. Okay, so what else can we say? What is useful? One says that the Brownian motion is homogeneous. Meaning that if I take the expectation of Bt minus Bs, let's look at that. So it was said that this difference, it has this distribution. Now you can choose the S as you want and the T as you want. So you could have chosen the T to be like T minus S and the S 0. Then it would be also B T minus S minus 0. And that would have also this distribution, because that's the point here. So from this definition, we get for free that this is the same as bt minus s. And this is 0. And the same holds, and for the variance we have already said so, but maybe just to have everything seen once. So it doesn't, here you can see it doesn't matter from which point to which point you take your difference. It only matters how much time is in between. So this is called homogeneous. Okay, so I think it's a good point. Well, I have 4 minutes. I shouldn't give too much away. So time is short and expensive. So after the break, after the break we start with a new section, namely we want to introduce Itô's integral. So let me already write the title so we can after the break continue faster. So we will talk about Itô's integral for simple integrands. And so we have our Brownian motion, like in the previous section. We assume this Brownian motion lives on a filtered probability space as we define it. And then we want to define the Itô integral. Which is named after a Japanese mathematician, Itô. And the notation would be, for example, like that. So the integrator is now the Brownian motion. And we are interested in such an object, but that we will do after the break. So I'm stopping here and then continuing 15 minutes past one.